Writer Media Group Original.
Hey, I'm Tracy. Before we jump into the podcast, I want to thank our wonderful sponsors, J29 Inc., innovators with the right solutions for your business and a company committed to giving back to the community. Reach out to them, J29 Inc. Welcome to Your Day Brighter, the podcast, real reasons to have hope in this world. I'm your host, Tracy Tiernan, and today's episode is like a masterclass in perspective. An incredible conversation with my friends, doctors Jeff and Diane Colquhoun. And they're going to talk to us a little bit about what it's like to be in medical missions. I'm going to Africa, the Caribbean, all around the world to treat people with medical needs that would not have access to this kind of medical care apart from just very special people that are willing to go and share their gifts. They've got an incredible just heart for people, heart for God. They've also got an incredible story, a journey that they've been on for 10 years. Jeff diagnosed with brain cancer, stage 4 brain cancer. And yet in this conversation, this is what I'm talking about, a masterclass in perspective, perspective on suffering, great faith, as Jeff and Diane say over and over again, this word opportunity. Could it be that the trial that you're facing right now is an opportunity? I think you're going to be so encouraged by this conversation, and I'm so glad that you're here. Let's get to it. Jeff and Diane Colquhoun, and an episode that I'm calling The Cancer Box. Colquhoun, to the Your Day Brighter podcast. I'm honored to talk to you today. We have an interesting connection. We have a very dear mutual friend. And so that's kind of how we got to meet today, really for the first time in person via video stream. But I've heard of Jeff and Diane for years from our mutual friend. And the story that you guys have been living through and just faithfully trusting God with every bit of it. And so I feel like I know you. I prayed for you long before I met you. And I'm just excited to hear and learn from you today. Jeff and Diane, first, would you just tell us a little bit about yourselves? How long have you been married?
We've been married, I want to say 29 years, 29, be 30 this summer. We actually sort of had a late start in marriage. Gosh, we were in our like early 30s when we reconnected after meeting in medical school. Thus, we have three children, a son that's 26, a daughter's 23, and our youngest is 20. And still in college. So yeah, some of our friends our age have grandkids and more. So we're kind of at that, you know, at the level we're just loving, you know, having kids and still doing the college thing together.
And you both are doctors. Jeff, you're an ophthalmologist, yeah. Is that right?
Yes, I'm an ophthalmologist.
And I'm a general internist.
I bet you guys have interesting conversations.
Yes, we do. Diane's, I'll say internists are really smart. They, you know, they have to know, you know, the entire body, you know, top to bottom. And I'm only focusing on that critical square inch of the human body, which is pretty complex in itself. And I don't know if it's an influence or not, but both our daughters, our oldest daughter is a nurse in Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Our youngest is in nursing school at Hope College. Both my sisters were nurses. We have many other physicians in the family.
Wow.
A couple of pediatricians and cardiac and.
A family that is caring for others. It sounds like there's a legacy there of people just caring for others. And that's pretty special. You have taken your practice, and I know you've served around the world with it too. Can you tell us a little bit about how you've gone into the world doing some medical missions?
Sure. You know, I think it went back to when I was a medical student. There was a very active Christian medical society, and you know, we were both involved, and I was leading the group my second year, and through that we had different guest speakers, you know, who had done missions, and so I sort of had it in the back of my mind something to do, and so when I was a resident of one of my first, it was a Christian Medical Society, MGM mission was called. And so I've done several to the Caribbean and Central America. And then I kind of, because of active practice, I took a pause, and then I started up again in about 2004, and about every year. Then I've done a mission project or so, one to the Middle East, and the last dozen years or so has been to Africa, to Zambia. And that's how, although we've known Rick and Elaine since we met in Battle Creek, they got us involved in Zambia through a, it was called a Friends of Zambia. It was a nation building project. It was affiliated with Imaginations, the other bring people of all different backgrounds and business to that nation and see how they could help build that country. And so that's how in 2004 we got involved together in Zambia. And so I've been there over a dozen times. Diane's gone a couple times. That's been an interesting part of our journey that sort of paralleled my practice and our faith journey. And every time we go, we travel, with a group of Christians, it's it just builds our faith. We're strengthened through our struggles because it's never easy, going to another country and bringing everything that we need. We have to bring, and there's always something that's not there, but God provides in amazing ways.
Traveling with a team of Christians who have all these skills to offer people and to help people, what kind of things do you do when you're there? How do they find out that you're coming? And what are some of those unique exchanges like? I can't imagine how amazing it must be to be able to help people that have never had access to the kind of care that you can provide.
Yeah, sure. The mission projects in Zambia have been organized by as an existing clinic, and that's what we've liked compared to some that I've done that where we pick up and we go to Nicaragua, and we set up in a clinic. We just basically set up a clinic in a church or whatever, and then we're gone, and there's uncertain follow up. This is a clinic that's affiliated with a Wesleyan church, so there's a hospital there as well. So we see some hospitalized patients. It's in a little rural town called Zimba, Zambia, not far from Livingston. The clinic runs year round. There's been staff there that keep the clinic going when the teams aren't there. There's roughly six or eight teams that come from the U.S. every couple months. We would bring the surgeons. Typically one or two or maybe several. The staff there would pool the surgical cases for us, and typically cataracts, but glaucoma and tumors, squamous cell carcinomas, cancerous tumors from the sun exposure are very very common. And pterygium, right? And we just started several years ago. We started a corneal transplant program. The Michigan Eye Bank, which is called now Eversight, it's sponsored us, and we bring a cornea surgeon, Dr. Buxton from New York, and so we do anywhere from 15 to 20, and we were given as many corneal tissues as we wanted, and we often had surplus. We found a corneal surgeon in Lusaka, the capital city, so we would, within a few days, determine what we needed. We'd send some tissues there, so. So we're expanding out into that subspecialty cornea. One of our delights of over the last few years, we've been talking about sustainability, and it's hard to sustain bringing teams every few months to accomplish the need. In a country like Zambia, there's I think it's a population of about 15 million, and when we first started going in 2004. This research we found was there were only about a dozen ophthalmology eye surgeons there, and hundreds of thousands of cataracts. So there's no way that our team could take care of that. So we tried desperately over years to recruit a local Zambian doctor, and finally we did several years ago. He was hired by our team. We had a fundraising to support him for several years, and so now he's going out, I think, his third years. Brighton Secundo, I think is his name. Just a wonderful Christian man. We've been kind of training him along every time a team comes, any complicated cases he might, hold for the team. But now Brighton is quite qualified, and he's got, along with the full-time staff, Now he can vastly increase the number of cases that he can do, and they're looking for a second or so surgeon. And so it's kind of the concept of catching a fish for someone versus teaching them how to fish is the better way to sustain a population.
The sustainability. You want them to be able to thrive and to be able to serve one another and keep this great work going. I just love that. I want to know from both of you as doctors, I mean, what is it like when you are able to treat someone? I mean, Jeff, especially for someone that can't see, and you're able to do something to perform a procedure that changes that. What does that feel like for
Well,
you?
an image just popped in my mind, and I wish I could show it to you right now. Imagine the scene in the and it's a tiny little clinic room, and the morning after surgery. So we had post-op patients, coming in with the eye patch that we did surgery on the previous day, and so they're all lined up in rows, and then one of our staff would be taking the patch off and putting some drops in, and then moving them to a chair to be examined by me or one of my associates. At the point that this one lady's patch was taken off, she just stood up in the middle of the room, and somebody had a camera rolling, and this lady just started dancing. It's just she was just doing the jig, and
There's
it
so
just
much
tell
joy.
without any word, you could just tell her words. And in the local culture, dancing is just a sign of happiness, appreciation. And so that just tells us that we're she's doing good. God has provided.
They're blind from the cataracts. So they're coming at a point where it's so advanced that just to have one eye cataract removed, they go from being blind to being able to see. So there's so much joy there.
Often we can tell when they're coming for screening if they're blind, bilateral, that a family member will be leading them by a stick. So the blind elderly relative would be just holding onto a stick, to be guided into the clinic. And then to be able to see them walk out on their own is just it's a joy. It's a God thing.
One of the great joys, other joys that we have going, is just seeing how the volunteers, how they adapt and jump in to help where help is needed. I remember you're telling the story. You should tell it of someone who had malaria, came in with malaria.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yes, one of our critical he was a scrub tech who
From Zambia.
from Zambia, who understood how to pass the instruments and clean them and all that. He was one of our critical staff, and the first day in the morning of our first day of surgery, he came in. He was just pouring sweat, and I just don't feel well. It was obviously he had malaria, and he couldn't work that week. And so again, the team together, so what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We happen to had as we have a kind of often kind of a motley group, people of different backgrounds. One guy was there with the eye bank, and he was there to kind of observe and look at the long-term program of having corneal tissue. And so I said, what are we going to do? And his name Mark, he said, well, I had before I was doing this, I was a surgical eye scrub, and so he happened to have
The
the
skill set
training, the
needed.
skills. And so I mean, he just jumped right in.
He was there to evaluate the program to see if it was appropriate for the eye bank
And we didn't
to be
to be
using
fully
giving all
using
these
tissues.
cornea tissue for this project. So over the years, and so they sent him, and then he found himself actually working on the job. And so those sort of God provides, and those sorts of stories just happen over and over. And the kids who come, a lot of these kids come, and they're so it just so grows their spirit to be able to be a part of this, and they engage in all parts. One of our daughters loved to she loved to talk to the patients before and after, hold the babies. There are a lot of babies that needed to be held because the people didn't always have someone with them, and they may be nursing or just needing someone to care for their baby while they're in surgery. And our Bridget was more than happy to rock babies. So, you know, everyone was just jumping in and helping as they could.
And our older daughter, I mean, she was an older teen, and she jumped right in and did some, she'd, you know, scrub in and help in surgery. Yeah, so everybody helped.
There's this momentum when God is at work, right?
Yes.
And and they're in the middle of something happening, and we all want to be in on it. It's like you can sense something special is happening, and I'm invited to be a part of it. I think that's really beautiful. I wanted people to get to hear this part of your story, because I know this is a big part of just understanding who you are and your love, your genuine love for people, your love for the Lord, your longing to serve, the way that you have faithfully used the gift that God's given you, your education, all of it to serve.
There's a lot of ways to serve. Like we, with the Friends of Zambia group, they were people of all backgrounds. One of the volunteers had he had a trucking firm, so he bought trucks to help truck the rice from the northern district to the capital city. And another had a carpentry business, woodworking, and so he bought furniture for the school. And so, you know, our background is medical, and so everybody has a gift. God's given everybody gifts to help in many different ways. You know, the body of Christ consists of a lot of different parts, you know, the eyes, the ears, the hands.
Yes, the eyes, the ears, the hands, we all have gifts to serve. I love this verse in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 7. It says, to each one, a manifestation of the Spirit has been given for the common good. I love thinking about how each one of us, you know, just like Jeff and Diane said, gifted by God to make a difference in this world. I hope you're enjoying this conversation with some extraordinary people, doctors Jeff and Diane Calhoun, and sharing about their medical missions experience. And now the next part of their story is absolutely incredible. What Jeff and Diane have been living with and living through for years now, but yet living with great hope. Stage 4 brain cancer. Jeff has such an incredible story, and you're going to be so encouraged by this. So thank you for hanging with me and for listening to the podcast, Your Day Brighter. Now, I want to just take a moment to tell you about our new sponsor, J29 Inc. I'm so excited about these folks, this amazing company. They can do a lot of things to help your business. They're innovators with leading experts in technology and processes that can help you from everything from staffing to data analysis, claims, health and human services. But what really impresses me most about J29 is their commitment to their people and their community. Tracy Mills, awesome lady. She founded her company on the principle in her favorite scripture, Jeremiah 29:11, if you're familiar with that. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. And this is all about having hope in the midst of whatever you're going through, that God has a good plan and a good purpose for you. And what drives Tracy in her business is giving hope to people by giving back to the community. She tithes J29's earnings back to nonprofits that align with her company's values each month. And so we're really honored to have J29 partnering with us. She is putting out a challenge out there to other businesses to join her and be a part of giving back to your community too. We were created to make a difference. To connect with Tracy, go to j29inc.com. So let's jump back into the podcast. My conversation with two incredible people, Doctors Jeff and Diane Calhoun, and their incredible story of living with a diagnosis that could easily take you out.
You would not know to speak to Jeff and Diane, sort of the journey that they've been on and the hard thing that they have been walking through together for 10 years. I mean, that it's stunning to me to see the two of you together, just this peaceful, joyful countenance. Our listeners are going to be blown away when they hear just what you guys have been walking through. And I'm really hoping and praying it'll be an encouragement to people that are walking through their own season. They need some hope. They need to be anchored. They need to hear that somebody gets it and somebody's there. So take me back, if you would. And Diane, perhaps you could tell it from your perspective as the wife of a man that you love very much, take me back to the day that you had, I guess, the first diagnosis that started to change your lives. Tell me about that.
Well, Jeff has stage 4 melanoma. And the first day was, gosh, it was 10 years ago, wasn't it?
August 6, 2011.
Yeah. And he had a little at his hairline, a little lesion, and he'd had it biopsied. And I remember he gave me a phone call and said, "Are you sitting down?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm sitting down." Sit down. He says, "Well, it looks like, you know, that this is, it's melanoma, and it may be stage, at least stage 2.
Yeah.
And at that time, maybe stage 3. And so that's, you know, we just stopped. We prayed, "Hey, Lord, please help walk us through this, because we can't do this in our own strength." Mm-hmm. And that was the start of it. And from that point on, it's been a journey that's in a sense been exciting too, because it took us on a path that we never expected. And I think even Jeff will tell you too that, you know, we've been blessed in so many ways that we've not had huge personal struggles until that point in our lives. Certainly struggles with parents and illnesses, but in terms of personal illness, between him and me, we've just been blessed that way. So that started a journey that has only deepened our marriage, our faith, growing us closer to God, and just depending on His presence, depending on it, and wow, trusting in Him. So that would be a blessing.
Yeah.
That would be a blessing. Yeah.
That was a pivotal moment, because you know, we said to ourselves, "Hey, there's a journey ahead of us." But I'll take you back even a little further. I was just a 1 year, first year in college, and I had joined. It was a Campus Crusade group, and I would say that was my moment that I declared my life for Christ. Around that time, a group of guys from our fraternity, of all things, we decided to go on a road trip out west skiing in that winter. And I think there were like 4 of us or so. And before we got in my friend's station wagon, my friend Tom said, "Hey, let's have a theme verse for this trip." And I mean, go figure, a bunch of college fraternity guys having a biblical verse. And we said, "Well, what?" And he said, "Well, First Thessalonians 5, it says, 'Rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you.'" And even had a little tune to it. And so we would sing that. We're on ski slopes and in evenings, and it was a time of health and good and plenty. And that verse has jingled in my mind almost daily over all these years, over the decades. And what I would say in retrospect is God was preparing me during a time that things were good, you know, school and education and health, family, and, you know, with our kids, that I was being prepared in August 6, 2011, that verse, and has, you know, a number of times, whether I'm in the hospital, getting a treatment, a surgery, or during a radiation treatment or whatever, that verse has remained in my mind and given me encouragement.
So he stood by that verse in times of plenty, and so
yeah,
it also works in all circumstances.
In all circumstances, so. Yeah. It didn't mean that I was all happy and giggles during those years. And, you know, we had some ups and downs. Every time there was a recurrence, I think there's been 5 or 6 now. You know, we'd have only one time, I think it was only early on when I found that it was not stage 2, it was stage 3. There were lymph nodes in the neck involved. That time we had some tears, but every time since, we certainly had times of discouragement, but we've gone, you know, every time to prayer and said, you know, "Lord, you know, whatever, you know, whatever's going to happen, you know, in this part of the journey, you know, just help us, you know, help us to wade through and to try to find some reason to rejoice." But there was one time it stands out, that was my lowest point. And it was shortly after, it was in 2014, I found that the melanoma went to stage 4. I had a seizure, and I found out from the MRI shortly there that there was brain involvement, brain metastasis. So I had my first craniotomy and went on to immunotherapy. And immunotherapy is a lot better than chemo. It doesn't wipe out every dividing cell. Basically, it engages the immune system to recognize and attack the melanoma cells as form. But even immunotherapy has some side effects, and I had several of them. My pituitary was wiped out, had fatigue. I developed a colitis, and I couldn't eat or drink anything for 4 or 5 weeks. And so that put me in the hospital at the University of Michigan. I was so sick and drawn out and fatigued. I remember that when Diane dropped me off and found me to my hospital room, and then when she went to park the car, and the resident doctor came in, and I made myself a no code, you know, a no resuscitation. I just said, all right, if anything happens, I just want to go. And he said, are you sure? You know, you can survive this. What, when Diane came back and she caught wind of that, she said, boy, no. She had to be changed.
Just can't leave this guy alone.
Change that. And we prayed together then. And during that maybe 5 days in the hospital, God just, he brought little angels to me. I mean, one after the other. There was a nurse that held my hand, prayed for me. The patient in the bed next to me, I found was much worse off than me. And a couple of the nights were there, thought he wasn't going to make it. And I found out liked to hear the Psalms. So I read Psalms to him. And I thought he wasn't going to leave the hospital. He left the hospital before me. Then the other fellow that came in was end stage, an older man with end stage cancer, and he was dying, and his family was all in there. And I got up and prayed with them. And God just, he told me that, hey, there's others around you that need me as well. And don't give up.
We would never have these opportunities to witness other people if we weren't on this journey. There was one time when we went to Cleveland Clinic, because we're medical, we have this habit of, well, we're going to check out MD Anderson and Cleveland Clinic and U of M. And what was this place in Tampa?
Oh, now we went to Moffitt.
Cancer Center.
We've been to 4 or 5 centers.
We want to understand this better, and just to hear people's opinions, different specialists. And so when we were in Cleveland Clinic once, where he had some stereotactic, the gamma knife radiation treatment of one of his brain metastases. And it was kind of a quiet little waiting room. And there was one other patient there, and his wife was in the waiting room with me for 3 hours. It was just the two of us. So, you know, it didn't take too long before we kind of shared each other's experience. She was from the United Arab Emirates, and they had come all the way over here to get the treatment, the same treatment that Beth was getting. And just we're so grateful that here we have it right here in the U.S. And we were able to pray together. Mm-hmm. You both, I think, ended up doing pretty well after that.
We did. And I think large because the ladies, the wives were praying for us both.
And then when we would go to MD Anderson, there's something called ground angels. So if you go from the airport and you're going to the medical center, you can sign up, and these ground angels, our volunteers, will take you there, because you generally don't need a rental car otherwise. It's just to get from the airport. And they're generally cancer survivors themselves. They always have an encouraging story to be able to share that. And it's just a sweet thing. Yeah. Sweet thing we would never have otherwise.
This perspective is something for all of us to hear. I mean, to really hear that with every trial that we go through as a Christ follower, he's in it with us, and he doesn't waste pain, and he's faithful to his promise that he can work good out of anything. And I keep hearing Jeff and Diane just keep saying opportunity. Yes. Opportunity, like your perspective on a really hard thing that you're enduring, is there's opportunity to encourage other people. There's opportunity to pray with other people. This to me is the perspective of heaven. It's instructional for anyone that is going through it right now, because that's a hard question to ask when you're like physically suffering in your body, you know, and you're not feeling well and you don't know what's ahead, to just pray, God, what is your intention? You know, what are the opportunities before me that you've given me because of this trial to make you known and to bring glory to your name?
We've learned, we're found that we have family all over the world. I mean, fellow Christians, immediately we gravitate to them and they to us, and we have an understanding and a connection that we don't have with everyone. And it's just, it's amazing to tap into that strength.
When I had my last surgery back in August, it was another craniotomy for a mass, brain mass, at University of Michigan. I couldn't believe the people that were praying for me. A number of our friends visited us at our home before. And then a prayer group, a Zoom prayer group that we're involved with, met at the church on the morning of my surgery at like 7:30 in the morning. They met to pray for me. Friends around the country and some of my friends in Africa, like Mercy and her family, Westone, the pastor Westone, were praying for me from around the world. So, you know, this verse says, and James says, the prayers of righteous men and women. And I believe that's large part why, you know, God's still using me in ways. And I don't want to forget that, being steadfast,
Living 10 years with cancer and stage 4 cancer, is that rare? I mean, are you a miracle, Jeff?
Yes, and the words come out, and a couple of my secular physicians, our oncologists, are starting to use that word. The survival charts for stage 4 melanoma is a downward. At 5 years, I only looked at the first year. You know, we looked at those, but for like 10 years out in my situation, and it's extremely rare. We just saw my oncologist at MD Anderson, who's moved to Moffitt Cancer Center here in Tampa a couple weeks ago. And I think he couldn't believe it. And when technician was interviewing me and we're pulling up my scans, she's looking at the scans on the screen and looking at me, looking at my scans, because I mean, if you look at my brain,
is this the same guy?
And then look at me, she was, I think, kind of confused. You know, if it was the same guy, she said, can I make a copy of your scans? I said, sure. I mean, use them however you want, educational, whatever. I think that's a miracle.
Too. Jeff has such a good sense of humor. I think the sense of humor helps, because he recently had a big area in his brain removed, because there was a lot of necrotic tissue there. He had one or two choices: hospice, because he was really going downhill this a few months ago, or surgery. And we decided surgery. You know, we thought, okay, we'll just go with the surgery. And he had a fair amount of his brain removed in the back. So now he'll go around and find the hollow spot. You know how you do it to a wall to find the studs in the wall?
Yeah, I can tap. Find a hollow area. And I think it's a sign unknown in neurosurgery. You know, but I showed my oncologist and he goes, never seen that. I can tell where it is.
Because we'd like to replace it with like the French language or
dictionary
or something, that little hot spot there.
Yeah.
I think one of the big blessings we've had is that our children were, our youngest was 10 so they've been through this journey with us. And then we had a 14-year-old, and then Peter must have been 17. Yeah. So raising kids and with faith and confidence, and having them grow with that, and they've all dealt with this differently. Our oldest has high functioning autism, and I mean, he's just very matter of fact about it and asking questions in a very blunt way. So you know, we're able to interchange with him in a different way than our middle child, Jillian. She's
very sensitive.
She just carries it all in her in her heart. She's very much Jeff personality wise, but just carries it sort of stoically even. But she's got such a love and a heart for her dad. And we've just seen her sensitivity towards others grow, and then our little Bridget, she was writing about it She was in sixth grade then. Every single paper, she's writing about her dad. Her dad, the teachers are all calling. Is your husband okay?
Yeah. No.
Because Bridget, she's writing. Everything just came out on paper. And it was just fun to have these three different ways of responding to really to grief. Also to see them mature through this. And for us as a family to mature through this and grow in our faith. And we just see the fruits now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think they've found maybe early that, you know, life's not all a vase of roses, you know, every day. There's ups and downs. And, you know, a lot of us find it out in different ways at different times in their lives. And you know, our kids have sort of navigated a lot of it. The word that kind of came out was they've learned about being steadfast in spite of challenges. And we're studying in Bible study Jacob's story and how he wrestled with God, and he came out with a limp, and for the rest of his life he had a limp. And so one of our questions, you know, for the class was, you know, what is your limp? And I immediately thought, yes, I have that limp that, you know, Paul talked about, the thorn in the flesh. And we don't really know exactly what that was, but, you know, eventually we'll all have some sort of, it could be physical, or might be emotional, or spiritual, or, you know, lost employment, you know, drugs, substance abuse, whatever. There's a lot of ways we can be challenged in this world, and through being, you know, steadfast, through the examples we have in the Bible, in the gospel.
Well, we love that verse, how suffering produces
perseverance,
perseverance, character, and then character,
hope.
Yeah. And what a great place to end with hope.
How does life not become just all about the thing, you know, all about the cancer? Because obviously this has been 10 years and you've continued to do things in the world. I understand you did, you know, marathons. I mean, you've continued to live a vibrant life and not have it all be about the thing. Yeah. Talk to me about that.
I learned this from someone else, and they probably learned it from someone else. Every time we go up to go for a follow-up visit or maybe procedure, we pull out what I call as our cancer box and all the research we've done. And in fact, I've got a folder like that thick or more. That
shoved up on some.
Yeah, it's a blue folder, and we'll pull that out, and sometimes we'll do some more studying, and so we pull out the cancer box, and we thoroughly evaluate, you know, the information from that. Maybe it's a follow-up 3-month visit. I just had one a couple weeks ago. Then I'll file that cancer box away. So I try not to, you know, think about it, you know, day to day.
He doesn't think about it.
I don't. I mean, I have little reminders, you know, like Paul's thorn in the flesh. And one is that one of my constant reminders is that from my the brain mass and the surgery, I lost the right half of my visual field. So if I look at you, I can't see us in the right side of the screen. So
which is wild for an ophthalmologist.
Yeah, which is wild. I mean, this was part of the reason I had to leave my practice. That was very hard to do.
But he'll put it in a box and then not think about it again. Not that it's not a denial. It really isn't. It's just, you know, that's not going to define his life or our life. In fact, he wanted to put it away so quickly after one visit that at the gas station, we had stopped to fill up the car, and he left that folder on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And we didn't even miss it.
Cancer,
the disc,
critical.
The scans, all his little medical. A good Samaritan found it and sent it in the mail. We hadn't even missed it.
I will never forget that story. You literally had the cancer box. You had the big folder, and you put it away. And you don't think about it anymore. So much so that when you left it behind, you didn't even miss it.
All my medical history and somebody. And I asked this fellow, how did you get my phone number? And he said, I'm sorry, I had to dig into your personal information. But he had to go like on the disc and find my phone number or something, you know, from. You know, so he had to really search.
So it made for another connection. We were able to make another connection with someone and tell a story.
Yeah.
See, don't you just love their perspective? They see all of the different aspects of this trial that they've been in. They see it through the lens of what is the opportunity that is before us to share our story and to share our faith. Just absolutely amazing. I think there's so much wisdom here for all of us. And I just wanted to jump in and just say, hey, I'm really glad that you're here. I really believe that conversations like this can be game changers for people. If you or someone that you love is just going through a trial right now, would you do me a favor? Would you share this podcast with them? Maybe like Jeff and Diane, they would be able to find some way of putting it in a box and filing it away so that it doesn't define how they live every single day. Just really humbled by the grace and wisdom of Jeff and Diane Colquhoun. My name's Tracy, and thanks for listening to this podcast. I have just a little more to go with Jeff and Diane, and I asked them the question, you've probably noticed this, they laugh a lot, don't they? I wanted to know, like, you guys are laughing, like, all the time. How are you doing that?
We're not always, yeah. I'm not always laughing. Sometimes it's a little bit annoying, but we do put up with each other.
Yeah. the words of James, I think it was the first chapter, consider it a joy, my friends, when you encounter various trials, for the testing will provide perseverance of faith. But the hardest part is consider it a joy. I mean, I still, you know, working on that, trying to find joy in the little things of knocking over, you know, objects on my right and spilling my daughter's milkshake, you know, all over her. You know, it happens.
What are you looking forward to right now?
Well, you know, the things I kind of missed out, you know, the little hidden benefits from this is that I was busy with doing marathons and triathlons, and my work was busy. We were running several businesses, and I love my practice of ophthalmology, but you know, that came at a cost. I kind of had life compartmentalized. You know, sure, I had my faith here, Sunday, you know, church, my friends and sports and all that, but you know, my family was compartmentalized too. And now, you know, my family and friends, my faith, family and friends is on top. And so
he can't get rid of me. I'm just always there now.
I am looking forward to continued, you know, more time, quality time with my family and friends. And this last month has been a lot of that.
He loves to to talk with anyone. So, you know, to get from point A to even from the car to like an appointment, you see someone, he just starts talking and it's a conversation going. It's kind of fun.
When you look back on your life, like pre-cancer, can you talk about some of the ways that your life has changed for the better? Because it almost sounds like a refining of your core values and living for that instead of the compartmentalization. Yeah. You mentioned. Can you talk about that?
Right. Well, I think my life was, and this is really getting kind of raw, Diane would probably agree, my life was getting cluttered, and a lot of things that I was doing and striving for me. I mean, sure, it was great to compete, and was, you know, physical exercise was good for me, but I was off during the summer, most every weekend I was off doing races, you know, taking maybe a chunk of a day, and, you know, training, I was squeezing 2 and 3 workouts in a day and my lunch hour, and that came at a cost. And so, yeah, I still try to exercise, and we're, you know, doing some swimming, and we walk, and you know, I'm looking for maybe jogging again, but we're playing a little pickleball. We didn't do activities so much together because it was all about competing. And so I think that's changed for the good. And like I say, we're spending more time with friends. And I mentioned this Zoom prayer group that, you know, we've been remote for this past year, forward to getting together now in person this spring. And so
if I could just add something, what I've seen in Jeff and how God has grown him is that, and prior to this diagnosis, you know, there was a big focus on, you know, on the racing and the triathlons, and he was very competitive, but and I thought, and it seemed like it meant a real lot. It just meant so much to him. But then when he lost the ability to really compete at really any level that, you know, that would be competitive, you'd consider competitive, He just gave it up with such grace, which kind of surprised me that God had worked in that way, because it meant so much before. And somehow God had allowed him to just, it's okay. It wasn't as if it was a huge, you know, there was any anger or, you know, huge grieving. One day he was, you know, I think you shed a few tears that you couldn't play tennis, you couldn't see the ball. And I mean, other than that, you just let it go. And he's just had this joyful spirit. And I didn't realize that God would work in his life so in such a way that it would be that easy to just surrender it. Mm-hmm. And he did. Mm-hmm. He did.
Well, I just adjusted my competition. So now
no,
walk. So now just I walk to try to keep up with Diane.
I never the grace and the faith and the surrender. And the peace that you both are exhibiting, I mean, it really is, it's palpable. It makes me think about how many times have I dealt with something much lesser, much, much less dramatic or severe, and turned myself inside out about it. And I don't know, maybe the pandemic has been a real teacher to me in that regard, because I sense this urgency and this draw to want to just grab every good bit of life out of every single day that I can, you know, to just to live and to love without fear. Has fear been a part of your journey at all? Because I'm not detect my fear radar is usually pretty sensitive, and I don't What has that been like for you? Has there ever been a time that you've been afraid on this journey? And how are you with that now?
You know, I would say very little. I mean, only in some of the deepest, darkest times, like in the night, in the dark, and, you know, in the hospital, you know, I'm alone, and, you know, I can't reach the buzzer. Only in some of those times, but I try to remind myself that in Christ, and there is no darkness. Psalm 23 is kind of my favorite. So even though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, it's only a shadow. You know, I try to reflect, you know, not on those few scant dark times, but on the times that God's, you know, pulled me back up. Yeah, and the people surrounding me that have so much help. And yeah, again, the word steadfast, and it comes back.
I, to be honest, I would say that I experience more fear than he does. But what has helped me is just that he's just such a rock when it's in his faith for our family, that helps to quell the fear that I have. And also just remembering that, you know, God says, be still and know that I am God. So if I remember that, okay, God will, I just need to be still. He will provide. He will give me strength. He'll give us strength. And he's in control of the situation. And so many times he says to fear not in the Bible. Yeah. It's really isolation that's the biggest fear, being alone, yeah. Left alone. Yeah. But if, you know, and we're so close, but if I know that I'm not alone and I'm with God, well, that's a huge comfort and takes that fear of being alone away. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about our prayer family. Because we've got, I mean, everyone all at once in our world is undergoing this struggle with COVID. And so that's created a type of suffering of isolation and of, you know, just all sorts of fear. Our church started this little prayer group where anyone could hop on at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m., and it lasted for several weeks, and then it ended. And if anyone wanted to continue, they could. And we were part of the people who felt the need, and so many people felt a need. And there were about 10 of us who just kept going on, I mean, at 8 o'clock every night. Yeah. And that happened over 300 days ago, and we're still on. We don't go on every single night, but several nights a week, and there's really just about 10 of us, and we've been through a lot of Jeff's illness this past 300 days. Other people have lost loved ones, have had COVID themselves, or in a loved one. It's just, there's been so much need. God is making something good come out of it. Just this drawing, we would never have drawn together.
And we believe it was a supernatural, you know, from the prayers answered around my last surgery in August. The way I came out of that surgery and recovered.
Yeah, prior to that surgery, we had everyone, all this whole group come to our house and we gathered in the backyard. He was anointed with oil, and it was all this prayer family. We're their family now.
Who would have thought during a season where we were being kept apart from one another that you actually came together and got even closer and more connected? See, that's the Lord. That's God doing what he does. I feel like I've taken from you today. I'm really, really grateful for your generosity to share your story. And I know there's so much more there. And I want to encourage you to write your book because we need it. I wanted to share this with you, Jeff, just before we go. I can only imagine what it was like to not be able to do what you do anymore because of your vision being affected. Mm-hmm. And yet I can't help but think that you maybe more than ever are helping people to see now.
Spiritual sight is perhaps more important than the physical sight. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you both. I know we're going to be friends.
Oh, we are. We are already.
So how do you live with a serious illness or a chronic problem or something that is just so overwhelmingly difficult? How does it not consume you? And how can you still live a vibrant life? Here with your bright spot, it's Jeff and Diane Colquhoun.
I learned this from someone else, and they probably learned it from someone else, but we pull out what I call as our cancer box, and all the research we've done, and in fact, I've got a folder like that thick or more. It's a blue folder. So we pull out the cancer box, and we thoroughly evaluate, you know, the information from that. Maybe it's a follow-up 3-month visit. So then I'll file that cancer box away. So I try not to, you know, think about it, you know, day to day.
He does that. But I feel like he'll put it in a box and then not think about it again. Not that it's not a denial. It really isn't. It's just, you know, that's not going to define his life or our life. In fact, he wanted to put it away so quickly after one visit that at the gas station we had stopped to fill up the car, and he left that folder on the sidewalk. And we didn't even miss it. The disc, the scans, all his medical, his little medical. A good Samaritan found it, sent it in the mail. We hadn't even missed it.
Your Day Brighter is produced by Tracy Tiernan, John Lawhon, and Brighter Media Group. A special thanks to our outstanding team, our editor Julie Gilligan, Todd Gaddy, and Caroline Burke. You guys are the best. And especially we want to thank you, our wonderful listening community. Thanks for being a part of this podcast. We hope that you will spread it around, share it with people, subscribe, leave a review so that other people can find it. And remember, tell somebody your story today, or better yet, ask somebody to share theirs.